Now, if you are here today as someone who has been married or is married, I want you to think for a moment. I want you to think back to the marriage proposal. What was it like? Was it a romantic thing? Was it a special moment and a special time? Did it all go according to plan? I'm seeing some screwed up faces looking around the room. I'm guessing some of them may not have gone exactly how they were supposed to. Some marriage proposals are quite cute. Last Christmas, my daughter Sarah was away with a group of people travelling overseas, and in the group was her boyfriend. Now, because they were travelling at Christmas time, they'd agreed that they wouldn't buy each other any Christmas presents, that was a given, that you're not to give any Christmas presents. It was going to be too much for them to pack into all of their bags. Well, on Christmas morning, Adam presented Sarah with a present. Now, it wasn't a little box with a ring in it. It was a photo frame, and it was all wrapped up, and Sarah was actually quite angry that Adam had done this, bought a Christmas present when they'd all agreed that they wouldn't buy any Christmas presents. She opened up the Christmas present, and this was the photo in the photo frame. Whoops, that one there. Adam went and sat down next to Santa at Westfield, holding a sign that said, "Will you marry me?" and presented that to her on Christmas Day. Of course, she said yes. Now, that's cute, but we've got another marriage proposal in the passage that we're looking at here this morning. Not sure if you noticed it as it was being read. It didn't kind of sound like the normal sort of marriage proposal, but that's what we read about in this chapter. Now, let me remind you of where we're up to in the story. When we looked at Ruth chapter 2 last week, we saw that Naomi had really hit the lowest point in the story, or possibly the lowest point in her life. Her husband had died back in chapter 1, as had both of her sons. She was living in the foreign country of Moab. She's come back to Jerusalem with her Moabite daughter-in-law. And I think the lowest point for Naomi is there in chapter 2, right at the beginning, when she sends Ruth out to glean in the fields. There was a law in God's law that had been given to Israel that they were to look after the needy and the desperate and the aliens and the foreigners by not pulling up all of the stalks when they harvest, but leaving some behind for poor people. So for Naomi to say to Ruth, "You go out and pick up those extra stalks of grain," it's really saying, "We're that desperate. We've sunk that low. Things have got that bad that we're relying on this system to just get something to eat." Ruth has been sent out and she goes into the field and picks up the grain behind the harvesters. But the chapter closes on a very positive note. So you remember Ruth came and worked all day in the field of a man named Boaz. Now, she had no idea who Boaz was, but Naomi does. Boaz is a close relative of her deceased husband. And this kindness from Boaz is no accident. So by the time we get to the end of chapter 2, Naomi's attitude has begun to change. She's beginning to realise that God is looking after her, despite what she'd thought for the first two chapters. And then finally, I think the real turn comes at the beginning of chapter 3. This is what it says, chapter 3, verse number 1. "One day, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, 'My daughter, should I not try to find a home for you where you will be provided for?'" Now, this is the turning point, because now Naomi's no longer focusing on her hardship and her sorrows. She's actually thinking about somebody else. She's thinking about Ruth. And what can she do to demonstrate kindness to Ruth, who's shown her so much kindness throughout this story? Naomi is wanting to make sure that she can do the best possible thing for Ruth, and that is to find her a husband. You might remember back in chapter 1, Naomi tried to stop Ruth from coming with her. She said, "Look, you're not going to have any chance of finding a husband back in Jerusalem. You'd be far better off to stay here in Moab and find a husband here." But Ruth was insistent on going. She wasn't going for what she stood to gain from Naomi. She was going with Naomi for what she could do for Naomi. Well, now Naomi wants to repay that kindness. And she wants to take on the role of finding her a husband. And the obvious candidate in the story, well, he became apparent at the end of chapter 2. Boaz is the likely candidate. And he's the likely candidate for a couple of reasons. Well, first of all, because he's already shown great kindness to this family. But the other reason is a little bit more technical. Boaz, as we're told in chapter 2, is a close relative. The expression that gets used in this passage is a kinsman redeemer. Probably next of kin would be the way we would describe it today. See, there was a law back in the book of Deuteronomy that said this. If brothers are living together and one of them dies without a son, his widow must not marry outside the family. Her husband's brother, shall take her and marry her and fulfil the duty of a brother-in-law to her. So this rule wasn't just for brothers, it extended to the wider family as well. This was a rule about family looking after family, making sure that they were cared for. This was the social security system of the day. This was how people were looked after. And the rule went beyond brothers. It was the responsibility of the nearest relative, the next of kin, to rescue those people who were in need. Naomi and Ruth are hoping that Boaz will be the one to fulfil that role. So Naomi comes up with a plan. She's not going to wait for Boaz to make the proposal. She's going to be a little bit more proactive than that. Now, go back to chapter 3, the beginning of the chapter, and look at what it says. One day, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not try to find a home for you where you will be provided for? Is not Boaz, with whose servant girls you have been, a kinsman of ours? Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash and perfume yourself, put on your best clothes, and then go down to the threshing floor." It's one of those surprising cultural differences when you look at this passage, isn't it? Apparently back then it was the women, you needed to tell them to get dressed and wash and put perfume on. I thought it was only teenage boys that you had to say that to. But apparently it was the women back in those days who needed to be reminded of those things. So she tells her to get herself prepared. There's a celebration happening down in the harvest, at the end of the harvest, and she's to join in and go down there and meet with Boaz. Harvest time back in those days would have no doubt been a time to celebrate, especially when you're just coming to the end of a serious famine. And that's the scene that Ruth walks into. She goes into this shed where all the grain would have been stored. She's walked into these post-harvest celebrations. Ruth's been working with Boaz's on Boaz's farm with Boaz's staff, so it wouldn't have been unexpected for her to be there. There's sometimes some strange marriage proposals that you see. I saw one night on Channel 10 News, and it wasn't so much a news item. If you've ever watched the Channel 10 News, you know that Tim Bailey goes out and does these on-location weather reports, and he does little updates throughout the news, and then finally comes back at the end of the news program to give the full news, the full weather details. Well, he'd done his little spot where he gave the quick update and said, "We'll be back later in the news with all the details." Well, there was a guy walking past who saw that he was there. He was out walking his dog. And he went and spoke to Tim Bailey during his break and said, "Look, I'm wondering if I can actually use your program to propose to my girlfriend." And Tim Bailey agreed to do this. So he did the weather at the end of the news program and then said, "If you could just bear with me for one moment, there's a gentleman here who has something that he needs to say." So he came over, stood in front of the camera and said, I can't remember what her name, Gillian, I think it might have been, "Gillian, will you marry me?" Now, the camera crew actually followed him all the way back to his house. He knew that his girlfriend would be watching the Channel 10 news, followed him all the way back to the house to see whether or not she would say yes. And thankfully, she did. Now, that's a strange marriage proposal, but we've got an even stranger one happening here in this passage. The celebrations for the harvest are just about over. It's time to go and have a lie down and a sleep in the shed. And that's what Boaz does. And Ruth comes over, uncovers his feet and lays down beside him. And have a look at what happens. Verse 8 of chapter 3. In the middle of the night, something startled the man. He turned and discovered the woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he asked. "I am your servant Ruth," she said. "Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer." Now, she's not asking for a piece of the blanket. This is a marriage proposal. She's saying, "Will you marry me?" And Boaz knows that that's exactly what she's saying, because look at what he goes on to say in verse 10. "The Lord bless you, my daughter," he replied. "This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier," that is, to Naomi. "You have not run after younger men, whether rich or poor." Boaz seems to think that if she'd wanted to, she could have found a younger man. Boaz is presumably an older man, closer to her, to Elimelech's age than to Ruth's age. But Ruth has chosen to make a commitment to Boaz. She's saying that she is willing to marry him. Boaz is clearly flattered by the proposal. In fact, he describes it as a greater kindness than the kindness that she's already shown to Ruth, to Naomi. Now, with any good love story, there always has to be a twist in the plot, and that's what we see happening towards the end of this chapter. It comes in verse number 12. Boaz is flattered about the marriage proposal, and he'd love to be a kinsman redeemer for this family. He would love to have Ruth as his wife. But he knows that there's another man, a closer relative than him. Verse 12. "Although it is true I am near of kin, there is a kinsman redeemer nearer than I." Yes, Boaz is a close relative, but there's actually a closer relative who needs to be consulted. This man has the right to redeem Ruth and Naomi, to rescue them from their situation. This man needs to be consulted to see if he is willing to fulfil the duty that he has as a close family member. Boaz would have clearly loved to have married Ruth and taken her as his wife, but he actually seems quite willing to trust the Israelite social security system that God has put in place. Look at what he says in verse 12. "Although it is true that I am near of kin, there is a kinsman redeemer nearer than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to redeem, good, let him redeem. But if he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it." Now, don't misread this. I don't think this is indifference on Boaz's part. I don't think he's saying, "Oh, well, he can do it or I'll do it. It doesn't really matter." I don't think that's what he's saying at all. I think he's actually saying that he's trusting God that this will all work out the right way. He's trusting that God has put this law in place and there is a redeemer nearer, a closer relative than me. He needs to be consulted. And we need to trust that God will have all of this under control. Now, I've been saying all the way through this, as we've been looking through the book of Ruth, that kindness is the big idea that comes all the way through the book. We see the kindness of each of the characters shown to each other throughout the story. But there's another idea that's almost so much a part of the fabric of the book that you don't even really notice it, that you're not even kind of aware of it. See, it's not just kindness being shown, it's kindness in the context of relationships. The kindness of a daughter-in-law is what we see between Ruth and Naomi. The kindness of a close relative with Boaz, who is a relative to both Naomi and Ruth. The kindness that Ruth shows to Boaz in this marriage proposal, saying that she would be willing to become his wife. And Boaz says that the kindness of being willing to marry him, that it's even greater than the kindness that she's already shown to her mother-in-law. But do you see how all of this kindness is happening in the context of relationships? These people are family. They're relating to each other. God shows his care for each of these people in that context of relationships. I think it actually says something about how God has wired us, about how God has made us. It says something about the way that God intends for us to live. And it says something about the way that God shows his kindness to us. I want you to notice something that gets a little bit obscured by the way that the New International Version translates this passage. But in chapter 3, verse 9, this is what Ruth says to Boaz. When Boaz says, "Who are you?" she says, "I am your servant Ruth," she said. "Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer." Now, it gets a little bit lost, but back in chapter 2, we've heard almost exactly the same words from Boaz. If you turn to chapter 2 and verse number 12, this is what Boaz says to Ruth. "May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Now, it's those words, "under whose wings," because it actually doesn't say, "spread the corner of your garment over me." It actually says this: "I am your servant Ruth, spread your wing over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer." See, Boaz acknowledges that Ruth's come to take refuge under God's wing, but Ruth knows that it's under Boaz's wing that she finds that protection. Because that's what God has intended. God shows his kindness to each of these people by giving them each other. God shows his kindness to them by having them show kindness to each other. One of the unusual things about the book of Ruth is that there are no miracles. There's no miraculous intervention anywhere in here. We don't even hear God speak in this book. There's nothing particularly remarkable that happens. It's really just the ordinariness of life. But you can actually see God at work in all of that, in orchestrating these relationships, in bringing these people together, in having them there for each other, to care for each other, and to look after each other. See, I think we know that relationships, and particularly family relationships, are important. Probably the greatest moments of joy in your life will be related to your family. And probably the greatest moments of heartache and sadness will also be related to your family, because it's that important. There'll be more happiness in your life because of your family than any other single factor. And there'll be more tears shed in your life because of your family than any other single factor. When family relationships don't go right, it's a painful thing. Because there's something deep down in us that knows that family is important. If your house burns down, it doesn't take you terribly long to realise that it's just stuff and it can be replaced. But if your child dies, or if you face the death of your husband or your brother or your sister or your parents, there's a sadness there that will never really go away. There's an ache there about a relationship that's been cut short. See, relationships, that's how God's got us wired. We're made that way because God works that way. He's made us not just for relationships with family, he's made us for a relationship with him. See, in this life we'll have the great privilege of not only being part of the family that we're born into, but we'll also have the privilege of being a part of God's family, of calling God our Father, of being part of the family that meets here on Sunday. If you're here today as someone who has that trust in Jesus and you say that this is your church, then this is your family. Like it or not, you're meeting here today with your brothers and sisters. And just like in your real family, we're not always going to get on perfectly. But this is the family that you're a part of. This is the family that you're to care for and look out for. This is the family that you're to love. This is the family that you're to show kindness towards. So how do you think you might be able to do that more in the coming week? What are the needs of your family members here? What are the struggles that they face? What are the difficulties that they have? What are the hardships they're going through? How is it that we might be able to show that kindness to each other, perhaps a little better in this coming week?